And we'll go to public hearing, take up item five, administrative civil liability action. So. Let me begin by reading opening statement. This is the time and place for a hearing by the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, North Coast Region, to consider adoption of an administrative civil liability order from Mr. Ronald Engling. The order specifies a penalty payment to satisfy administrative civil liability complaint number R1-2008-0105 issued on August 28, 2008. The order was issued for violations of State Water Board Order number 99-08-DWQ. This item has been properly noticed. The sheet explaining the procedure for this hearing is available at the handout table. Enforcement team for the Regional Water Board consists of Paul Guerin, John Short, David Leland, and Luis Rivera. Kim Niemeyer, Staff Counsel to the State Water Resource Control Board's Office of Chief Counsel, will be advising the enforcement team. Kim currently advises the Regional Water Board in other unrelated matters, but will not be advising the Regional Water Board in this matter. At this hearing, the Regional Water Board will be advised by Samantha Olson and Catherine Coleman. Will all those who expect to give testimony in this matter please stand, raise your right hand, and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm that you will tell the truth in this matter?
Yes.
This time we'll start with staff presentation.
Mr. Chairman, today staff is presenting an order for administrative civil liability. These are for discretionary penalties arising out of a complaint issued by staff earlier this year. The pollutant in question is the discharge of dirt and sediment, and the primary cause is a violation of the general construction, the statewide general permit for construction as enrolled, as the permittee enrolled in that permit. And today's main staff presentation will be by staff engineer Paul Guerin.
Okay, Paul, thank you.
Chairman, member of the boards, good morning to you. My name is Paul Guerin, and at this time I wish to introduce the file into the record. I am a regional board employee. I'm a construction stormwater inspector. I do inspections of construction stormwater sites region-wide, and thus I am the person presenting this particular item, which is Administrative Civil Liability Order R1-2008-0113 for Mr. Ronald E. Engling for sediment discharges to state waters. And I have a presentation to make now on the PowerPoint. Item 5 is a violation of construction stormwater permit 99-08-DWQ. It involves about a 3-acre site owned by Mr. Engling. Mr. Engling began grading the site in early September of 2007 for a small subdivision. Regional Water Board received a citizen complaint regarding the grading activities on site. I, being the staff, initially inspected the site in mid-September of 2007. Noted exposed, disturbed soils existing throughout the site. And I warned Mr. Engling about the threat of discharges from this site and the need for obtaining coverage under the construction stormwater permit. Mr. Engling did obtain coverage under the permit in October of 2007. 99-08-DWQ requirements are to develop and implement a stormwater pollution prevention plan document, a SWIP, to install effective erosion and sediment controls prior to the onset of the rainy season, and to monitor the site and maintain erosion and sediment controls as necessary. Here is an overview. Do we have a pointer? This is an overview of Weaverville. Here's Highway 299, Highway 3. Mr. Engling's site is right around here. This is East Weaver Creek, which discharges into Weaver Creek, which discharges into the Trinity River. This is a close-up of the site showing the drainage ditch right here, which I'll show in a few slides, culvert going underneath the road and discharging into East Weaver Creek. Mid-September of 2007, my first inspection revealed the following. This is Highway 3, right here, about a mile up from Highway 299. This is the initial access road that Mr. Yingling cut into his site. This access road travels from Highway 3 about a quarter mile up to the top of his site. It's a very narrow, long development site. His road was basically inboarded against the cut here and was also inboarded on the other side of the road pretty much the entire length of his road. So he's got inboard ditches pretty much the entire length of his development. Here's a slide of some of the unconsolidated soils on site. And just a slide showing the access road going up to the top of its property. And as mentioned, this road is inboarded pretty much all the way down to that initial cut that I showed you two slides before. January of 2008, Regional Water Board received a second complaint. The complaint alleged that the drainage ditch along Highway 3 was filling with sediment from his construction site, and the source was believed to be from Mr. Yingling's site. Pictures were emailed along with the complaint. These are the initial pictures that we received from the complainant. This is taken from Highway 3 looking into the drainage ditch that runs parallel to Highway 3. Second slide of a complaint picture sent to the regional board. February 19th inspection. I went and inspected the site in person. Inspection revealed ineffective erosion controls on site. Significant road erosion, significant erosion of the fill slope and drainage ditch, and up to 6-inch layer of sediment deposited throughout the 200 by 40 foot drainage ditch. This is a large drainage ditch that was filled from side to side with sediment in places up to 6 inches deep. A conservative estimate of the amount of sediment that remained in the ditch, assuming about a 3-inch layer, was about 75 cubic yards of sediment that remained in the ditch after the discharge ceased, after the stormwater runoff discharge ceased. Here's some pictures from that inspection. This is the outsloped area. This is basically a fill prism. Typically, this would have been blanketed and seeded prior to the rainy season. Typically, the access road would be rocked with road base, neither of which occurred here. This is the drainage ditch, the main inboard drainage ditch that comes down from his access road from top to bottom. It was severely impacted, and as you could see, it was severely eroded. This is the first picture of the drainage ditch from Highway 3. This is the top end of the ditch, showing sediments coming directly from Mr. Yingling's site. This is about a third of the way down the drainage ditch, showing severe erosion within the ditch. This is about 150 feet from the culvert that exits under Highway 3 and drains to East Weaver Creek. And you can note by the amount of sediment and also the exposed gravels here, the volume and velocity of the runoff that carried the sediment off this site was pretty severe when you can see this kind of gravel dropping down or dropping out after the water slows down. This is a picture just before the inlet that crosses under Highway 3 to East Weaver Creek. Mr. Yingling then, in March, did do some erosion controls. He put in a pipe here. This is a pipe ready to be laid into the ditch to try to control the erosion of the ditch itself coming down off this fill slope area. Here's a picture of the top end of that pipe. Certainly this pipe will help to control erosion of the fill slope here. It really won't do much for erosion in the rest of the site, which will come down right through that pipe. East Weaver Creek is a tributary to Weaver Creek, which is a major coho stream, and which itself is a tributary to the Trinity River. All flows from the Highway 3 drainage ditch discharge into East Weaver Creek. The remaining sediment deposits in the drainage ditch will continue to discharge to East Weaver Creek. Mr. Yingling is responsible for the discharge of these sediments, and the staff has requested that Mr. Yingling remove accumulated sediment from the ditch. Here are some more slides from the March 17th inspection showing basically ineffective erosion controls on site. I'm not saying that Mr. Yuengling did not put any erosion controls on site. What he did do was ineffective at preventing off-site discharge of sediments. Again, this is the access road coming up from Highway 3, showing site conditions on March 17th. Administrative civil liability complaint was issued in August of 2008, issued for violations of waste discharge requirements under the construction stormwater permit 99-08DWQ. There was a proposed ACL of $10,000 for one day of sediment discharge that staff observed on February 19th. Staff recommended a $5,000 reduction because Mr. Yuengling has no prior enforcement history with the Regional Water Board and because he has made some effort to control new sediment discharges from the site, that being the pipe. Following issuance of the ACLC, Mr. Yuengling reportedly made additional efforts to minimize further sediment discharges from his construction site. He has put in water bars. He has seeded and blanketed the outslope area. He has put in, he has rocked his drainage ditches, and he has put in some additional straw on site based on my inspection yesterday. So he has done some additional erosion controls on site. The transition of the ACL to an order, the ACLC provided Mr. Yuengling with the option of waiving the hearing by paying the $5,000 liability. Mr. Yuengling did not respond during the 30-day hearing waiver period. Staff contacted Mr. Yuengling, who confirmed he is contesting payment of the administrative civil liability, and thus the complaint has become a proposed order for consideration of the board with a $5,000 civil liability for one day of discharge. At present, Mr. Yuengling, as I mentioned, has installed erosion controls on site for the upcoming rainy season. The ditch cleanout remains an issue. There still is sediment within the drainage ditch. I've been in touch with Caltrans, and they've indicated that Mr. Yuengling can apply for and receive an expedited encroachment permit for the ditch cleanout. This may help to prevent further action by the regional board during the forthcoming rain season. And I do need to add, based on the inspection that I did yesterday, the site is still vulnerable to discharging this rainy season. And the problem on this site, if I might add, is the road itself, the access road and the driveways, which typically would be rocked before the rainy season or at least have rock check dams on it to prevent erosion of the road itself. This is highly erodible soil in this area. And the one rainstorm that we had this past 6 weeks ago showed already the rills and gullies that are forming on that road that will continue if nothing is done to the road and the driveway area. That is the end of my presentation, and I'm assuming that Mr. Yuengling and his counsel will like to respond.
Good morning. My name is Matthew Hannum.
Hold on one sec, just in terms. Any board member questions of staff? I have one in terms of your first point there that you represent that the at present there are erosion controls installed, but then in your comments you alluded to the road and problems you see on the road, and I'm not quite clear if we should be worried about things as they stand at present or if they're under control.
I believe we should be worried about things as they stand at present. He has water bars on the road, but the road itself is highly erodible. So you've got, with rain and runoff, you have sediment-laden runoff hitting these water bars and being driven into the ditches and going down off-site. So, in my opinion, it's the road and the driveways that exist on site that need additional help. At present.
And just to clarify, that's because it's not graveled and rocked, it's all dirt.
Is that correct?
That's the essence of it. Okay.
Jed?
Just so we've got a twofold issue then. So we have the additional erosion control that's needed to protect the site from this year, even despite that there's been some work that's done out there already. But then we also have cleanup that needs to happen down along the Highway 3 ditch.
That is correct, and I would defer to Caltrans in terms of the necessity and the reality of cleaning that ditch out at this late time in the season.
But that's still something that we're focusing on.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
And for me, could you clarify for me the ditch issue and its location?
The ditch runs parallel to Highway 3 from about where Mr. Yuengling's site begins, runs down about 200 feet to a culvert that crosses under Highway 3, which then travels about 200 to 300 feet before it discharges into East Weaver Creek.
So just show us on the...
You're saying it's the 200 feet from his property to the culvert that where you say...
It's
clean the, out...
Okay. Keep going. Okay.
Yeah, this one doesn't help.
Well, Mr. Yingling's site is right to the right, to upper right-hand corner of this picture. So his site basically borders this ditch, or at least is very close to the ditch. The ditch then runs 200 feet to the culvert, which discharges under Highway 3.
And that is Caltrans property, the ditch?
The ditch is Caltrans property, yes.
I do have one question. You say there's a good potential for the road to be eroded itself and ending back in that ditch. Is that correct? And there's still, you say, approximately about 3 inches of padded sediment in the ditch currently?
Currently, none of the sediment has been removed from the ditch since my inspection in February. So there's still 3 to 6 inches of sediment in the ditch throughout the whole ditch.
Oh, okay, because I thought you said 3 inches had
well,
been
what I did is I did an average, sort of an average of 3 inches over the entire ditch.
Okay.
Just to get a ballpark figure of the amount of sediment that exists in the ditch right now.
Okay, so it really hasn't gone anywhere.
No. Okay. In fact, after the events of January and February, which deposited the sediment, it didn't rain anymore up here. So basically, what is there is what was there as of February and March of last year, of this year.
Okay, we'll go on. Mr. Yingling's representative.
Morning, my name is Matthew Hannum. I'm a local Weaverville attorney. I represent Mr. Yingling. I'd like to ask the board chair to exercise his discretion and allow the filing of Mr. Yingling's response to the complaint. Mr. Yingling's been struggling financially and was unable to hire me until just recently. And in fact, Monday, I'm a little late in the game. There is a formal response that's been submitted with a number of photographs with some contrasting information from what you just heard. And I'd like to ask now initially that response be admitted to the file and all my comments there too.
All right. I'll have to take that up. Do you have, I do have a copy in front of me of your submittal. I think it's 4 or 5 pages in length with half a dozen or so pages of pictures. Are these pictures available only in this printed form, or do you have them electronic and can be viewed here?
They're only available in the printed form. I apologize for that.
All right. And I have a sense that staff have this copy and have made somebody...
No, at this point, you have the copy, and one copy's out for copying.
That's what my point was. It's out for copying at the moment. The board's or chair's decision to not allow it at this point because it's not available to all board members,
if it comes back
from the copy exercise, then we can... take that up, and I don't have a sense of the timing of that. I would offer that we'll have you go forward and make a presentation. You don't need to read it to us. We will read it here shortly, and if it's not available prior to the conclusion of this discussion, we'll hold this item and take it up either later this morning, first thing this afternoon, and for a conclusion, so board members can have a chance to review the written material. But at this point, my intention would be to go forward and take your verbal comments and walk us through and respond to our questions. That'll
be fine with me. I'm used to saying Your Honor. Mr. Chairman,
he'll thank your honor.
This is my first appearance before this board. I've done many other administrative hearings in my career. In my research on regional water quality control boards, some of which I have here, it indicated it was quite possible that the constitution of this board this morning would be just 3 members. And so I provided 3 copies. And so... not to make an excuse, but to explain why there's a lacking number of copies. I'll go ahead with some comments. Mr. Yingley doesn't deny that there's an erosion issue there, but what is this board being asked to do this morning? What is the charge? The charge is a discharge of erosive settlement into East Weaver Creek, for which the complaint cites no evidence. Clearly there's evidence of erosion. Clearly there's evidence of sedimentation in this ditch area. You've seen that. But is there some evidence before this board that constitutes competent evidence that a discharge in excess of the local regional standard has been exceeded? I submit that it is not, and you've seen nothing of that kind, and therefore it'd be improper to impose an administrative penalty on that basis, right? We could almost stop right there. We do have a landowner, and indeed Caltrans, that has suffered erosion on their land. Something needs to be done about that. The big challenge, of course, is, and what you haven't heard, is that there are numerous other landowners who discharge their stormwaters into that same ditch, and we'll talk about a ditch. I'm glad you asked about that, because that's an important point here, including another construction site immediately adjacent to Mr. Yingling's site, and including a mobile home park that discharges water onto Highway 3 that ends up into that culvert, including Highway 3 itself, and then along another subdivision up a road called Angel Road, which abuts Mr. Yingling's property and which discharges mud down to that same culvert. What's the point of this discussion? Simply to say that all of what you see right there is not specifically attributable to Mr. Yingling. We concede that some of it is, but all of it is not. And in my opinion, it's wrong to kind of hang him for all of this when that's just simply not the case. And you also haven't heard about these other people and these other discharges and the other factors relating to what you're seeing there. Now, in terms of the ditch itself, if you read the complaint, it reads like, here's a discharger dumping mud into this ditch and it runs into the creek. What we're talking about here and some of the earlier photographs depicted was a large kind of U-shaped swale area that's long and very wide. This is not a ditch. It's a depression in the land. We can call it a ditch for purposes of this proceeding. However, that area has drained water off that hill forever, and indeed all the other surrounding areas. And this condition you see here, and I've lived in this community for 4 years, and I'm very familiar with that area, and I indeed inspected it yesterday myself, is in excess of what's typically there. But if you go up there during the winter months, you'll see a ton of water sitting in this depression. And indeed, it's used for a part of the area there that's not depicted, but it is part of this ditch that we're talking about today, is used for the pasturage of animals, and which in and of itself is an activity that can chew up and cause mud and erosion and sedimentation. And not depicted right there, but up on the hillside, right on the other side, on another owner's property, is a bare, and this would be shown in my photographs, which we'll hopefully get a chance to see, is a bare, erosive hillside leading right down into this area, not a part of Mr. Yingling's property, but another landowner's property. So, to me, this morning, it just simply doesn't appear that this board really, quite frankly, has jurisdiction to impose a penalty, because they've heard no evidence that turbid waters of a quantity in excess of the regional standard have been put into the creek, ultimately through this depression, which leads to of what we'd call a formal ditch of maybe 20 to 30 feet, and then to a catch basin alongside Highway 3. Now, as I'm sure my peer here, my colleague, will admit, where that catch basin is, we call it 300 yards from Mr. Yingling's property. And after water has settled into this swale area, it's a long ways away from his property. So again, the complaint is kind of misleading in terms of its discussion of erosion coming down the hill, going into a ditch, going into a catch basin, and heading onto the creek. We argue that this area here stands for, when certainly not inundated with water like this, and we believe we had a 10-inch rainstorm at this time. And indeed was admitted earlier today that the sediments and erosion settle in that area. Now, let's move on to the what I call the formal ditch, and where the culvert excuse me, formal ditch and where the catch basin is right next to Highway 3. Right now, that formal ditch, it's what we'd call a ditch. It's roughed in. It's probably 5 to 6 feet deep and probably that width. There is a straw bale dam about 20, 25 feet up from that catch basin, which cannot be seen, and which I don't know that my colleague here has ever seen, because that formal ditch is completely filled with brush and blackberries and so forth. And that has been in place for years to prevent the problems that are occurring now, long before Mr. Yingling ever even started his subdivision project. If we look, and again, we're hampered by not having the photographs, but if we look at that short ditch, the formal ditch I call it, there's no way, given the level of vegetation in it, there's no way to look at that and even see if mud went in there. You would have to get in there and rip out all that vegetation, something we probably wouldn't want to do, and see what's in there. And there's no way to tell now. However, if you walk across the street, right across Highway 3, where the inlet pipe from the catch basin runs into the pipe that leads to East Weaver Creek, you'll see a Caltrans grate right there. Again, I had a photograph of that, but probably not able to see that. You look down in there, there's no mud in there. Those pipes are clean at this time. I don't know why that's the case. It is right after summer, but a massive inundation of sediment and erosion in there would appear to leave some sort of residue in those pipes, which you'll find none right now. So that's essentially the substance of what I'm here to say. Now, if this board is interested in imposing a civil penalty, which again I argue they don't have the jurisdiction to do this morning, but if you go ahead and do that, I want to talk about Water Code Section 13.323 factors. These are the factors under which 13.385, this board can look at those things and decide to modify or even reject the penalty state seeks to impose here. And the first one, and I'll try and be as brief as I can because I know it's a long day, is the nature, circumstances, extent, and gravity of the violations. Extent and gravity, I argue, cannot be determined, again, because there's no specific test, there's no photograph showing exactly what Mr. Yingling is alleged to have put in that creek. There's just not. There's no evidence of that. We have circumstantial evidence of something getting into the creek. Ultimately, the water you see here is going to settle into the ground and some of it's going to run into that creek. But without knowing what he did, we can't know whether he exceeded the standards. We don't. You've not heard that. So the extent and gravity and the lack of evidence in support of it here today is a mitigating factor which I believe should be taken in consideration if a penalty is going to be imposed. Another factor, this is the circumstances. Mr. Yingling suffered a stroke in March of 2008. That's a couple of weeks after the site visit for which all the photographs you see here took place. He was hospitalized twice for a period of 2 weeks locally here and in Reading. And Mr. Yingling is a heavy equipment operator. He's a tradesman. And obviously, having suffered a stroke, that impaired his ability to get back on the job and in his off time go up to the site and do the things he needed to do, which have been done in large part. Apparently, the state still has an issue with the road, but the state did generously concede all the other activities that had gone on. We'll go into that very briefly in just a moment. That's the circumstances we think mitigates the gravity of the violation, if there is a violation. And then another one of the 13.385 factors is susceptibility to the cleanup or abatement. We've talked about cleanup in respect to the large swale area of the ditch. Apparently, the state maintains something needs to be done there. That's fine. Mr. Yingling will participate in that with his labor and at his cost, along with the other persons who discharge sediment and erosion into that ditch area that has been collecting those things for decades and decades. He's not here to try and suggest that there aren't issues or problems, but he's not the only one, and he shouldn't bear the entire cost. substantial abatement work. The issues you've seen here are susceptible to abatement, and he has, since he got back on the job in June, installed armor-plated culverts. That means that they're rocked in with fabric underneath to the most part, prevent erosion to the extent possible at the current stage of the development of the site. Ditches, water bars have been installed, catch basins. You haven't seen photographs of these sorts of things. Hopefully with my documents to come in now or later, you would. Substantial seed cloth matting has been laid down in a number of places at the site. Native grasses have been planted at the site. Straw has been broadcasted throughout the site. These are very expensive measures done to satisfy the state and also to mitigate the erosion problem because it's simply the right thing to do. Degree of toxicity is another factor. There's no allegation that there's any toxic discharge gone on here. That should be taken as a mitigating factor in levying an administrative civil penalty against Mr. Yingling. And in fact, we, again, and if I keep belaboring this point, I think it's a very important one. There's no evidence before this board that any degree of turbid discharge ever made it into East Weaver Creek. Ability to pay. As noted, Mr. Yingling's a self-employed heavy equipment operator. He's not a wealthy man. He's self-employed. This project here, comprising 4 2-acre parcels, represents his retirement. That's what he's working for right now. It is the sole asset he intends to use to fund his retirement. He takes a salary of $1,000 a month from his construction business, as does his wife. They live on $2,000 a month from his construction business. The remainder of his sums pay his employee and other overhead costs of his business and help to fund his operations here at the project site. Times are very hard right now, both last year when he suffered his stroke and then now. And I submit to the board that a civil penalty in any amount will be a significant hardship to Mr. Yingling, and seen in context of the mitigation efforts he has paid for and done, we believe that he shouldn't be penalized at all. He has no prior violations. Degree of culpability. If it could be established that sediment discharge did get into West Weaver Creek, there would be culpability. That can't be established or hasn't to this point. But if the board is somehow going to satisfy itself that that did occur, Mr. Yingling's not the only discharger here. He is the only one before this board today, but it's simply not fair for him to take the hit for all of the sediment here when if we all took a walk out there today, we would see that it's simply not just him. Finally, the economic benefit. Complaint and the accompanying discussion discusses an economic benefit of between $1,000 and $2,000 owing to the erosion that Mr. Yingling is alleged to have caused and could have prevented that substantially by investing that money prior to the erosion occurring last year. That money has now been spent 10, 20 times over for the things that have gone on up there in mitigation of the current condition. Finally, other matters that justice may require. As a technical legal matter, and simply for the record, I question whether these surface waters and perhaps even East Weaver Creek are navigable. Okay, here we go with the U.S. Constitution, the commerce power under which the federal law, which essentially through state law, causes this board to be constituted in the permit issuances, even applies to the waterway at issue here. It may, but I'm going to raise the issue now that East Weaver Creek is not a navigable stream, and there may be no jurisdiction for the state in this matter on that basis. Consideration of all of the above, in my opinion, everything that I've said, and indeed much of what my colleague here has said, all militate in favor, in my opinion, and for this board in a rejection of the complaint and no institution of any civil liability against Mr. Yingling. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Questions from the board?
Yes.
I had one in our staff report. Has your client gotten their county permit, grading permit at this point in time?
Mr. Yingling, can you raise your hand? Have you obtained a county grading permit from Trinity County for your work there?
No, there's no grading permit as such required.
Oh, okay. County. Thank you for clarifying that.
I have a question for staff.
Go ahead.
I have two questions. What is the distance in... You showed us a slide of the overview of the site in reference to East Weaver Creek. Mm-hmm. What is the distance from the inlet to that culvert to the outlet into East Weaver Creek?
To the creek? I would estimate it about 300 feet.
300 feet. Now, is that a... is that a pipe, or is that an open ditch? Or
no, it's a culvert. It's all underground.
It's a Good. Metal corrugated...
Exactly.
And again, the distance? I'm sorry.
About 300 feet.
300.
Paul, could you put up the map, an aerial view or something to give us all a sense of...
There
it is right there.
So the orange line or red line?
The red line is the culvert.
300 feet. What is the slope on that? Is it steep or is it flattened? Or I'm just
no,
trying
it's,
to
it's fairly
the,
flat there.
The level of fallout of the sediment as it travels from one point to the other.
May I add a few comments?
Just one. There's another site map you have that's a bit larger scale.
It's a larger scale, right?
So I'm trying to fit together this larger scale with the previous one and having trouble. So I'll go to this closer, smaller scale, that one.
Yeah.
So the Scott Mountain Road, is that Highway 3? Is that?
Yes.
And what I understand, the chair is confused. So in terms of the ditch and the collection of sediment prior to crossing the culvert, so that's in this red line area?
No, that's the blue line that leads directly
from the site, the rectangular site, to
the culvert.
Then the chair is not confused. So that.
I have another question. So the site's located there, and the discharge then from his site would travel. What's the distance from the site to the inlet of the culvert?
As I said, I estimated it to be about 200 feet.
Okay. 200 feet.
I didn't actually measure it with a tape measure. I just sort of...
Oh, well, no. Estimates are cool. I'm just trying to figure out deposition time. So, and then, counsel, you're suggesting that there's other folks in between the site and the inlet to the 200 feet that could possibly be contributors, or are those folks across Highway 3?
Yes, ma'am, both. There are other sites in between my client's property, and well, it's part of the ditch site that ground is all churned up in there, both by animals, both by weather activity, and then there's a bare hillside in there, which just by viewing it, you could see it's an erosive problem. And then neighboring my client's property is a large. Do we have copies? Is a large. Similar construction site where substantial excavation has gone on.
And that's between the site and its inflow there by Horseshoe Lane.
It's next to my client's property, but it runs down to a road called Angel Road, which is blocked by that square that says site there, which in turn, Angel Road is a hill. It comes down a hill. Properties drain to it, including my client's property. Not his property, but his access road to a limited portion. And those run down to this large swale ditch area. And then we have water draining. I'm not a civil engineer, but if you go out there, it's clear to see that water drains off Highway 3 itself. That's why it's there. The culvert was placed there.
Is the ditch from the site to the inlet an open ditch? You're referring to it as an open swale. I'm familiar with the site, but not in totality. So it's an open ditch, vegetated, one of those things that Caltrans comes around once or twice a year, mows it out, and kind of cleans it out a little bit, and then That's been my experience.
Anyway. Well, I don't know if they would mow it out. In this instance, they would periodically clean it out with heavy equipment. It's basically, you know, it's a large, flat, wide ditch that basically runs along Highway 3.
And if I might add to that, because it's an important point of what this is, because that's where the waters run to and settle and then run into the what you'd call a ditch, like alongside of a road, and then into the catch basin. It's a wide U-shaped depression area of land, which I think is probably 3/4 to an acre in size. And it's the lowest area all around there. It's at the very bottom of the hill and beneath the highway itself. And it's collected water for as long as anyone can remember.
Thank you.
All right.
I have some questions whenever you're ready, Chair.
All right. Let me just say we do have copies of your remarks. The Chair will allow it to be entered in here and hand it out in a minute. And
thank you.
I will ask for... All right. Other comments by members of the public. Indication earlier that somebody wanted to speak. I want to take that and during this time give board members a chance and enforcement team a chance to review this document if we have public comment, and then we'll come back to, you know, staff have issues that we want clarified and board members have issues that we want clarified. Mr. Corbett?
Yes, there's two purposes for getting materials in. One of them is for the board to have adequate time to review the materials. The second is for staff. And I hope that when they review it, one of their options is they may or may not need additional time, depending on since I don't know what's in the filed response, but sometimes you can quickly review it and sometimes you can't. And so I want to make sure they realize they have the option to say they would need more time.
So, and I will note just for the record that staff indicate that the last picture in this file is not with us here, but somebody's gone to make a copy of it. So it's almost complete. It's not entirely. And Dave?
There's an extra copy.
And again, it's, you know, it puts a burden on the board to take materials late like this, but the chair's judgment, we've made numerous efforts to make contact with the property owner and we finally got something, so I'm willing to burden on here as best we can. Any member of the public wants to address the board at this time on this item?
Chair? Should I wait for my question?
Yeah, hold up. Okay. Mr. Yingling, come forward then.
Hello, my name is David Ruiz. I've lived in this area since 1964, and I live on Angel Hill Road. And this ditch that you're talking about has been a mess since 1964. My wife owns the 5 Cent Gulch Mobile Home Park, and they have a clean, established ditch through there since the 60s. That dumps into this, what you're calling a ditch area. And then another property owner who has about 9 acres directly above the ditch put in a road as long as Mr. Yingling has and 2 building pads, and that added to the mess in this ditch. And then the adjacent property owner to Mr. Yingling, at the same time that Mr. Yingling was doing this work, he did a tremendous amount of work, and it just dumped sediment onto Angel Hill Road, and that also went into the ditch. So it's not a clean ditch. It's never been a good situation. Before Mr. Yingling ever started this project, because I live there, there's been mud going out onto Highway 3 for years. There isn't a culvert. When the predecessor to Mr. Yingling purchased the land and started, Mr. Riley was his name, started a subdivision, which he canceled. And they put in a little, like an 8-inch culvert to go from the upper end, the north end of Angel Hill Road, towards this ditch. Well, then the person that built the two building sites and the long road, he made a road over the lower end of the ditch. So now the water from the mobile home park can't go in under Angel Hill Road and into the ditch because now it's a driveway across there, compacted. So water has always flowed out into the highway, the state highway. Mud has gone to the state highway. And anyone that has lived here knows that. So I personally don't see, I think Mr. Yingling did as good a job as he could to address the erosion problems. But it is a problem, and the man directly above this site has now just planted grass and straw, but last year he added as much sediment to this ditch problem as Mr. Yingling's did. So it's not a good, clean situation, never has been, since 1964, so as long as I've been here. That's all. Any questions?
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Anyone else? All right. Staff want to make some comments?
Yeah, I just want to add a couple of comments. One, at the time of my inspection in February, the vegetation that existed in that ditch was clearly at a level where it was down. You could walk the entire ditch right from Mr. Yingling's property right to the culvert. So it wasn't like it was hidden or things couldn't be determined at that point. This sediment that came off of Mr. Yingling's site was one of the worst small site erosion problems I have ever seen. I've been doing these inspections in Oregon and California since 1992. This site deposited a lot of sediment into that ditch. I did not note other sediment coming from the adjacent property to the south or from Angel Hill Road during the two times I was up there looking at Mr. Yingling's property. This sediment came primarily, the bulk of it, from Mr. Yingling's property due to a lack of erosion controls on site. Plain and simple.
Mr. Leland.
Just a couple of a procedural and then something substantive. We gave Mr. Yingling several opportunities to provide a written response, one relative to the 30-day waiver opportunity. When we didn't get a submittal, we got in touch with him and gave him another opportunity to submit materials as of last Friday in anticipation of his intent to appear before you today. We received nothing last Friday. We have received something here today. It's very challenging to evaluate material that we get this late in the process and present something coherent to you on which you can base your decision. So that's point one. Point two is just to follow up on what Paul was saying, that our experience at any number of sites throughout the region is that with the level of erosion that was depicted from the inside ditch and the unconsolidated fill slopes, leaving out the swale or the ditch from this, that level of erosion results in discharge of sediment to waters of the state and waters of the U.S., in this case, East Weaver Creek. That's our experience. That amount of sediment moves with the water and results in that in discharge to waters of the state and waters of the U.S. in this case. So those are the two points that I wanted to add at this point.
Okay, thank you.
Question for staff. It's clear in the photographs on pages 4 and 5 of the handout that you provided us that the sediment is. It's very fresh material. It was a very recent deposit from when these photographs were taken. the point that Mr. Hannum has brought up, which I just don't have site familiarity, and so this is where I'm kind of looking to, he's suggesting that there are other sediment sources that are contributing to what we're seeing in these photographs. And so are we looking at in staff's opinion, are we looking at 100% contribution, that's what was responsible for what we see in these photographs, or is it a combination of other sites that could be contributing to what we're seeing here?
As I mentioned, I walked the site to the south. I did not see excessive or really any indication at that time of sediment leaving that site into the ditch. I went up Angel Hill Road at that time, both in January and February. I did not note anything coming down Angel Hill Road. I identified pretty much all of that sediment coming from Mr. Yingling's site. And walking the site, looking at the outsloped areas and the ditches, it was plainly evident that there was a significant amount of sediment coming off of his site. If I were to give you a number, 98%.
And again, just to follow up on that, the basis for the proposed administrative civil liability here is one day of discharge based on one day of observation that we made. We haven't gone back and looked at the rainfall records, for example, for Weaverville for last winter to identify every storm that may have produced runoff during the course of the last winter. That would result in an inference of a number of additional days of discharge. We also haven't gone through a calculation of the volume of the void of the inside ditch, for example, just as one piece of this, that at $10 a gallon would add up to a substantial quantity, a substantial potential administrative civil liability associated with the volume of material that is no longer on the site.
And also keep in mind that the two complaints that came in were specifically directed at Mr. Yingling's site. They talked about sediment coming off that particular construction site.
The material that we see in the ditch, so from the site we have the blue arrow, and this is the swale where this material has parked itself. Is this just a big slug of material that stopped there, or is there evidence that it made it underneath through your red arrow into East Weaver Creek?
Yeah, there is. Yeah. I mean, the sediment, the loose, unconsolidated, mucky sediment went right to the culvert. And you can understand, it doesn't take rocket science to realize that when you have a large volume of water discharging with sediment, that most of that gets carried through the system. It's only when the rain or the snowmelt stops that you end up with the sediment that remains in the ditch. Most of it's gone down the creek. What's left is the remainder when the volume, the velocity of the water slows down.
Can I ask my question?
Yes.
You did say, I think Jeff brought up one of it, did you say you looked at the other sites that Mr. Hanneman mentioned?
I looked at the site. If you look at the square the rectangle on that picture, I looked at the site to the south between the reservoir and the Highway 3. I walked it extensively and didn't note at that particular time, any new erosion going into the ditch. And certainly that site had some areas that had been previously graded. In my opinion, those areas had, they'd been graded years before and pretty much had settled down again, and there was not a lot of loose material coming off that site. From Angel Hill Road, I did not note a lot of activity going on in terms of sediment coming down the road. In terms of what the council said about another development nearby, I did visit that site. I talked to the gentleman who owned that particular house, and this was after the sediment discharge is noted as part of this hearing. After that point, this gentleman began grading on his site, which is just adjacent to Mr. Yingling's site. So the contention that there's another development site immediately adjacent to Mr. Yingling's site is one where this is an after-the-fact development work that this other gentleman was doing. So it's really not really pertinent to this particular item.
We've had the initial complaint, prior to the initial complaint, we really don't have a good idea other than the previous gentleman's testimony that has always been filled with sediment. But you did mention that between the two time between your two visits, the difference that there was.
Yes, and I did note the ditch at the time of my initial inspection in 2007, and the ditch was fairly clean. It was vegetated. There was no evidence of new sediment on top of the vegetation that existed in the ditch. It was only after the February inspection that I noted that.
Did you happen to be able to look into the culvert?
At the time of the February inspection, I didn't look in the culvert. I looked in, you know, it was the culvert itself had some brambles and brushes on it at the time of the February inspection. But the loose sediment came right to the throat of the culvert. So, I mean, I could deduce that obviously the system was working.
There's a certain
it was draining.
Amount, yeah, it had gone up to that point where the water...
And I might add, I did walk East Weaver Creek yesterday, and I did note many, many areas of impacted soil. In fact, a lot of it was the exact same color of the sediment coming off of Mr. Yingling's site. This creek did take a hit from this property.
In either one of the complaints that you received with photos along with the complaint, had anyone gone to the outlet of the culvert and taken a picture of any kind of a sediment? And,
I mean, during that time, the creek was at such high flow
that it wouldn't
matter. There was no way to determine even where the outfall was at that time.
Mr. Corbett.
One, regarding those complaints, are those in the administrative record? Otherwise, we're sort of dealing on hearsay on hearsay on hearsay, and I'm not sure the...
Yeah, I have record of the complaints, yes.
Okay, so they are in the administrative record and were available for inspection.
They're not in the administrative record, but I can make them available.
I just want to know whether they're in the administrative record. Very briefly, to legal counsel, my recollection is the Port of Cologne Act is not based on federal navigability, but waters of the state standards, and that's what would be applied here. Is that your opinion as well?
Actually, this is Samantha Olson, your advisor in this matter. It appears that this complaint is based on Water Code Section 13385, which is grounded in federal law, and so the stormwater provisions are federal law, and so it implicates waters of the U.S. standard, not waters of the state.
Okay. Are you able to offer an opinion then as to the navigability of the waters, which really gets into waters in the United States for this matter?
I would counsel that you ask your enforcement team, since they're familiar with the facts of the case and the specifics on the ground.
Okay, I'll get that to that in a minute. I wanted to ask to our enforcement team on 5B, and this is throughout the staff report, you have the statements, the volume of turbid discharges resulting from inadequate erosion sediment control from this site could not be calculated. And you have that in several other places. And what that ends up is it could be zero. And so my question to you is, and I realize the reason the difficulty of calculation is the whole reason they require permits is to avoid that logical dilemma. But can you offer evidence or an opinion that it was sufficient to be significant, that it was at least at that volume level, not that there could be no calculation of any kind?
David Leland of your staff. The process by which we become aware of situations like this and respond to them typically doesn't get us out there when in the middle of a storm event. We learn of these things afterwards. We go out and inspect. We're making inferences based on observations after a storm has occurred. We don't typically take measurements of turbidity during a storm because we're not there during the storm. We're looking at the voids of the inside ditch. We're looking at the failure of a fill slope, of erosion and rilling from that, and inferring from that that material is no longer there and that it has moved downstream with waters. The way that we document these things.
And you believe that would be significant enough to bring
yes.
it within the code? But I think it is awkward when the written report is very ambivalent on that subject, just for future reference. I mean, I think you can find areas of significant without being able to do precise calculations.
I certainly wish I had been there during the storm. I could have done a complete synopsis during the rain event, but didn't happen.
Well, We have charges of nuisance and all kinds of things. There's got to be, was it of sufficient quantity to cause a nuisance? Because that's not what the staff report says. And
well, if you had 75 yards in a drainage ditch, that alone is a nuisance. I mean, Caltrans has to go and remove that sediment now that's accumulated in the ditch.
But from local testimony, it appears to be something they have to remove on a regular basis. Did you hear me?
Repeat it again, please.
When you said it's something that Caltrans has to remove, from local testimony, it kind of seems like it's something that maybe Caltrans has to remove all the time. From the delivery from the gentleman's
Does anyone
driveway.
Local know when the last time that ditch was cleaned out?
We have a fellow back here who says yes.
The chair is going to entertain bringing additional speakers from the public.
Has he been sworn? I don't
know.
She come forward. And just to make sure, I don't recall, but I'm going to say, you heard the early statement that I read. You expect to give testimony in this matter, please stand, raise your right hand, and take the following oath. Do you swear or affirm you tell the truth in this matter?
Yes, sir.
Thank you. If you would just take a seat. Seat and
I'm going to use your map over here.
John Hodges.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen.
You got it right there.
If you back this up, that isn't a Caltrans ditch. That's my property. And even though I own this property all the way from this reservoir, all the way down to the corner here, and then all the way up to Angel Hill Road. And even though I've been getting hammered on by people saying that I've eroded here on this building site that I had, before my father passed away, my father had planned to build there. That is my house there. I do have and still have in place an emergency action plan when we did this cut. And there is installed here, and even though people keep alluding to that my property is part of this problem, which it isn't, but there are hay bales right here at this catch basin. All of the erosion that came from Ron Yingling's property, which is primarily 98%, like you said, is Ron's erosion, is now sitting on my property. If you remove, I went over here to East Weaver Creek to try to take a picture at the time. The creek was higher than the outflow. You couldn't tell. And then there's blackberry bushes in there. But if you look in there, if you take a stick and move those blackberry bushes, those hay bales that are on my property that I put in there personally are acting like a coffee filter. They're staked in the ground. There's blackberry bushes grown over them. As the sediment comes to the hay bales, it retains the sediment and lets a cloudy but not a muddy water. Well, it's water running through hay bales have been there. And anyway, if you look in that catch basin, if majority of Ron's mud would have got into that catch basin, it would still be there today, and it's not. You follow me?
Not okay. Exactly.
He filled my property about 12 to 14 inches deep in mud, basically, in my pasture. When that mud hit those straw bales, if it would have continued into East Weaver Creek, then therefore there should be 14 inches of mud on the other side of the hay bales. Consistently. It's not. If you were to look in the catch basin right here at Highway 3, those hay bales have retained almost all of the sediment on this property. Which, that's what I designed it to do when I built the pad where my folks were going to live right here. And eventually there is a building pad there, and then when the time comes, I plan to have my mom live there.
Okay. Thank you.
But therefore, this isn't Caltrans property right here. they own just to the keel of Highway 3.
Okay.
Well, Mr. Chairman, so essentially your testimony is the sediment could not have come from Yingling?
Oh, no, the sediment came
from... Okay, you're just saying that it can't come from...
It came from Ron.
And it's still there, I think.
It's still there.
Okay, so what you're arguing is that that is not a contributor then to the culvert to make it...
You would have to look...
To the Red Arrow ditch there.
Like I'm saying, even though I'm being attacked here...
I'm more interested in your facts.
Well, but. No. And then saying that I could have been a contributor to this, and this gentleman here walked the property, and like he said, mine might have been old, but those straw bales were put there. In fact, okay. I was under scrutiny. They were monitoring the amount of settlement when I did that construction, okay. And the straw bales are, in effect, they are still working like they were designed to do, which retained... What I'm saying is I just don't like to see an injustice, even though I don't appreciate being thrown in this mix. I only feel that it's fair that I point out the fact that the sediment didn't get past my straw bales.
Okay.
In the amount that you could look at the catch basin. It's a metal flared end, and the amount of sediment in there isn't the same amount, the same depth. I've got a chain link fence that's that deep in mud where the pig pen is that's directly from Ron's property. And the 10 inches of mud that was on my driveway that he repaired that. So.
Okay. Appreciate it, John. Thank you. Anyone else? Okay. Please come forward. Come up. No, I want you to come forward and speak in the mic. It's being taped. And again, I don't know if you stood or I'm going to.
Yes, I did.
Okay, good. Thank you.
My name's Ron Yingling. And like I say, I've struggled with this real hard. But on the other side of that culvert, across Highway 3, is a county or a state catch basin, concrete square catch basin. Okay, this is the pipe that comes into the catch basin is elevated. Okay, and the pipe going out of the catch basin is elevated. So there's an area like a foot or so deep by 2 foot or three or whatever it is. It's a pretty good size. But any kind of mud or anything like that that came through that pipe would have been there. And you can look down through the grill. There's a grill on the top of it. And you can look down in there, and there isn't anything in there. Nothing. Some leaves and some rocks. And that's it. So I don't know how I could have got any turbidity into the river systems at all. That's all I have to say.
All right. Board member questions? All right.
There are a couple legal questions that were raised. I didn't know if you wanted me to address those.
Yes, please.
Okay. John, you had, Board Member Corbett, you had raised the issue of, I think it was section... What we're basing our allegations on are requirements of the stormwater permit. So we included for you in the order some of the requirements for those. The issue of stormwater discharges shall not cause or threaten to cause pollution, contamination, or nuisance. So maybe we hadn't really connected the dots for you. So pollution under the Porter-Cologne is essentially that an alteration of the quality of the waters of the state to a degree which unreasonably affects either of the following: waters for beneficial uses, and then facilities which serve these beneficial uses. Paul had pointed out to you that East Weaver Creek, or was it Weaver Creek, provides coho habitat. So this sediment, as we all know, is detrimental to the endangered species. So in that way, anytime we have significant discharges of sediment, we consider that to be interfering with the beneficial uses of the stream. So that was kind of the connection there for you. In terms of whether or not this was a water of the U.S., I mean, definitely we think that Weaver Creek is a water of the U.S. And East Weaver Creek, its navigability, I am not certain of it, but it is a tributary, and that sediment would make its way to Weaver Creek eventually, and Weaver Creek would be, in our opinion, a water of the U.S., navigable waters.
And then are you satisfied on the written materials that saying that the discharge volume cannot be accurately determined as being sufficient on the burden
right.
of proof of affecting a beneficial use?
Well, I understand that section.
And it occurs a couple times, so it's not just once.
Right, and what I think that we meant by that more so than, you know, whether or not it caused, interfered with beneficial uses was it was a large amount. It wasn't measured, so we weren't going to tack on the additional amount that could be included. I understand your point, though, and I think it's well taken, but the purpose of that statement was more so that we weren't going to add the additional penalty. We thought that we had shown sufficiently that there was a significant discharge away.
In other areas of the staff report, do you believe with that clarification that it doesn't end up on a finding of zero to a large sum? Just okay.
That was our intention.
All right. We'll bring it back to the board for action, I believe, at this point.
I mean, there is one additional point I'd like to make just for the board's understanding, which isn't exactly a legal point, but there is a lot of uncertainty in terms of whether or not the amount of sediment made it to the creek. And Paul was not able to go down there and you know, do testing and check. And often that's what our staff has to do, is make inferences based upon what we see on site. And it's very difficult for a staff to be able to put that sort of additional ability sometimes when there's limited time periods and other sites to...
Well, let me ask a follow-up question. Is it in the opinion of staff that the probabilities are 51% or better than...
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. That additional step, I guess my point was, that additional step wasn't taken to go and test. But that the information, we believe, is more than sufficient to show that the dirt made it to the creek.
And also that's why I walked the creek yesterday when the creek was at a low flow, so I could see the impact of the discharge. There are embedded sediments from this site in the creek, and it's severe in places.
May I add, please? And I thank you. And they got a late run at my paperwork, so I had no problem with their further testimony about it. But still, you have not heard any evidence that would hold up in anybody. 51% means preponderance of the evidence, more likely than not. You have not heard anything. In fact, you've heard substantial contrary evidence from the public and others. Even a neighboring property owner who was aggrieved by the erosion told you that it didn't happen. There's no evidence before this body that my client violated the regional board standard, and they cannot produce it because they don't have it. Now, he's being asked to cough up $5,000. That's certain, that amount, to him. And I submit to you that you've not been given anything that allows you to impose that. Thank you.
Okay. We have before us, I don't know if it's a resolution, it's an order. And it's my understanding that consideration has been made for the
discharger's prior history and consideration of the discharger's ability to pay. And I think we have, and it being focused on a one-day discharge that's stated to be February 19th, 2008. Do we have any advice from staff or our advising team?
I have a couple questions.
To Paul, what's an inboard ditch? And can you also point out where your pictures of the road are in relationship to the aerial map?
An inboard ditch is when the road is graded from this area towards the cut slope. So all the runoff is going to drain to this particular ditch right here. That's an inboard ditch. On this slide here, see how the road is graded? Basically towards the cut slope. And I might add that typically in modern road construction, these go away. No more inboarding. The road is graded outsloped. So basically it drains as a sheet flow as opposed to concentrating in a ditch.
Can you point out where the road is with respect to the aerial photograph and the gentleman's testimony about the state detention swale?
Drew, you want to go back about three slides to the overhead? Now, I'm assuming from what the gentleman here said that the Caltrans ditch is right here, and that the swale that we're talking about is the remainder of that particular area.
So what I'm asking is, your photographs and evidence of the sediment discharge, is it below the swale or above it? And do you have an explanation about, or did you observe an empty swale? Can you just respond to that?
I observed a full swale and a full Caltrans ditch all the way to the culvert. Loose, unconsolidated sediment right up to the culvert. So, I mean, basically all of the above. I have a picture from here, picture at midpoint, picture right there.
Can you respond to the argument that the hay bales that were previously installed are filtering like a coffee filter?
Well, I didn't see the hay bales, but in my experience, when you have that much sediment sitting after the runoff event is over, no hay bale in the world is going to prevent sediment from getting into that culvert. There's just too much volume and velocity of water traveling through the system not to drop anything out. I mean, it's going to carry that sediment through to the creek. As I mentioned before, what's left is what happens when the rain and the runoff event stops and the water slows down.
Okay, thank you. I just have one more question. Am I understanding the complaint correctly that it's based on not necessarily the actual discharge and exceedance of a water quality standard, but rather the violation of the stormwater permit and based on a actual or threatened discharge?
The order is based on an actual discharge from his site, an off-site discharge of sediment to state waters.
In violation of the permit?
In violation of the construction stormwater permit.
If you could walk me back through it, as I understood that after the first complaint, then he didn't have a construction permit but did get one September?
In October of 2007, prior to the rain season. And by the way, the item does also include a threatened discharge, which does remain to this date and did occur last year before the rain.
And in that construction permit, are there requirements set forward or
Certainly. Oh, yes. Yeah, there's a full description on the practices need to be done on site in order to prevent that sort of discharge.
And you were out again in January. Were those practices in place at that time?
I was not there in January. That was the complaint call that was phoned in. I was there in February. No, in February the site was exposed and had evidence of severe erosion.
Mr. Hales?
I think it's pretty clear that we did have
These are the February. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Just for the record again.
These are the pictures that I took during my inspection.
And the location of that picture?
That was on site. That was his drainage ditch. His inbore drainage ditch. Let's go back one. This is the ditch that came all the way down from the top of his site, and this is just prior to discharging off site. I'm sorry. It's about a quarter of a mile.
So a quarter mile
from the top of a site down to the bottom. So this is a little bit less than a quarter of a mile of a ditch.
So I think it's very clear that we have a lot of erosion on this particular site. You've got an estimate, a volumetric estimate of what's parked itself down along Highway 3. It seems that there's enough information here that we could give some quick estimates width, depth, length of the ditch on the amount of material that was evacuated. Not that the ditch is the only source. We've got slope and we've got road surface itself. Do you have a sense, or, you know, we keep saying in the draft order that, you know, these estimates could not be calculated, but it seems that we may be able to just get a relative proportion of the material that was evacuated from the site and compared with the material, the 150 yards that we're estimating, or 75 to 150 that's down there right now. Does that 75 to 100, 150 yards of material, is that equal to what was eroded from the site, or does that represent only 10% of what was eroded from the site? So what I'm struggling with here is how much of this that we have known erosion, we have known deposition, we have unknown discharge to East Weaver Creek. That's where I'm struggling with this right now. So if we can help complete that picture by just a relative amount of what was eroded off the site to what's parked there right now, maybe you can help me with that.
Well, I mean, certainly what was left in the ditch is a subset of the total amount that came off the site.
But
because
by how much?
Maybe half?
We haven't got that far to figure that out.
Yeah. And you keep in mind that from an inspector's perspective, a lot of what I do or a lot of what inspector does is based on best professional judgment, based on what's left after the event. You know, and you can deduce what went downstream based on what was left.
Right. And we can help do the same thing by looking at what was removed from the slope too.
That's true.
Okay.
I have to object to this.
Hold on 1 second. Mr. Corbett, want to raise a question?
Well, there's two ways to get it. One was what Mr. Board Member Hale suggested. The other is you go a sufficient quantity to have a significant effect, and it can be placed. I want to go that. But it's very difficult when the...
I'm sorry, Board Member Corbett. Can you hold that thought? I think the chair needs to hear the objection on the evidence before we continue to the discussion. So,
okay.
I'm sorry. I agree that Board Member Hales has framed the issue exactly as it needs to be framed. The challenge in asking the question, though, is we don't know the credentials of the people sitting here, there's no evidence as to the soil type, and therefore what type of substrate would filter out of it, we don't know the type of water flow and the amount at the time the discharge was alleged to occur. There's just no evidentiary basis for any of that. That's the whole crux of my client's position. We don't know. They don't know. We can guess and so forth, but without an evidentiary basis to rely on to make those inferences, then it's just a guess, and it's not proper to impose a monetary liability penalty on my client without a firm... You know, he says he thinks so. We infer there's this amount of material there. That's just not going to stand up. So,
well, I do encourage anybody to come down and look at the creek, East Weaver Creek.
Okay, so that was a long objection. I didn't find a valid evidentiary objection contained in that. This board, basically, you don't follow the standard rules of evidence in court, and so you can take testimony and then
you can weight it as it deserves, as you feel. So it goes to the weight of the evidence, and generally we allow most testimony in, but it is at your discretion. But I did not, unless he's challenging the expertise of Paul, that was what he started with, I didn't find an evidentiary objection.
Mr. Corbin.
Yeah, I think we're dealing and struggling with a late submittal, and then it's raised a bunch of very thorny issues. And to me, I'll ask back to staff, do you need more time to prepare a response? Because it strikes me you do.
Well, I think that question should be validly addressed to the prosecution team. It's their burden to make the case before you.
Well, I'll address it then to the prosecution team. Sorry.
There are two options, Mr. Chairman. Either... Yes, we would like some time just to see whether we have missed anything in the testimony that just was submitted this morning. So two options, recess and take it at the end of this board meeting, or otherwise recalendar for a future board meeting. But we would like additional time to look at the submittal.
All right.
No additional time is necessary. They could have a million years, but they're not going to come up with any competent evidence that's going to establish that my client exceeded regional board standards for water discharge in West Weaver Creek.
Right. Your point has been made.
Yes.
Chair will entertain this as an option that we, and not if the parties are available at 2:00 today, we would take this back up today for the purpose of deciding whether or not there's been sufficient time to review it. Maybe there won't have been. Maybe we'll decide at 2:00 to continue it to a future time, but at least reconvene on this item just at a time certain today so that we can resolve how we want to proceed at 2:00. Is that acceptable to everybody?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. We're going to take a break. 5 minutes.